Very special guest today. His name is Colonel Brian Birdwell. Colonel Birdwell is a decorated lieutenant colonel in the United States Army, won the Bronze Star during the first Gulf War. He was part of the battle, the famous Battle of 73 Easling, which is now studying at War College. He was stationed at the Pentagon as American Airlines Flight 77 struck the building on September 11, 2001, suffered third-degree burns on 60% of his body. President and Commander-in-Chief George W. Bush, and you might remember this from the news or the picture, stood in salute for about 5 minutes until Colonel Birdwell, with his injuries, was able to return the salute. After he received the Purple Heart, Colonel Birdwell did, and then wrote a book called Refined by Fire. Retired from the military, now serves in the Texas State Senate. Colonel Birdwell, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, Ty. I greatly appreciate the invitation to join you and David and Steve today. Thank you.
Well, this is our 9/11 show, and if you would, and I know you've done this many times over, share with us the events of 9/11 as you remember them.
Well, that's a very long answer to that question because by the Lord's grace, I was able to be conscious through the process till actually sedated at the emergency room.
But, wow.
But I'll be brief. Just like every other American there in Georgia and anywhere else, that as we're watching events unfold up in New York, whether it's that first cell phone call or radio or TV, and in my boss's office, we were watching the events unfold. You know, one of my coworkers got a call, turned the TV on, saw the North Tower with the huge hole, and then just moments later on live TV, watched Flight 175 crash into the South Tower, and just like every other American, thinking, you know, accident, and then the second one, these are not accidents, this is deliberate. No thought that we were next. Continue to watch events unfold, and in fact, we had knelt down and prayed for the folks up in New York, and understanding how difficult it is to respond in such a constricted restricted city, and
right.
And it's the two largest office buildings. 9:35, I stepped out to go to the men's restroom, told Sandy and Cheryl I'd be back momentarily. And when I stepped out to go to the men's restroom and said that, that was the last words that I would speak to my two co-workers. Both Sandy and Cheryl were killed when Flight 77 was delivered to crash into the building. When I went to the men's restroom, that, if you recall the video, if you're standing outside the Pentagon and you watch that part of the building crumble 27 minutes later, my window is four windows over on the left-hand side of where it breaks cleanly and crumbles.
Wow.
At second floor level. When I stepped out to go to the men's restroom, I walked through the part that would crumble and collapse, went to the men's restroom, and I'm now about to walk back through what would eventually collapse. I'm about to turn right back into the hallway there as Flight 77 is deliberately slammed into the building. So I'm 15 to 20 yards from where the nose of Flight 77 makes initial impact with the building at the E-ring being the outermost ring of the Pentagon. So by the Lord's grace, I have the privilege of being on the phone with you because for whatever reasons he chose, I'm speaking with you as the only survivor in the E-ring at the crash site.
Wow.
And so tough day, but the Lord's been good.
It's interesting you mentioned the Lord a number of times, and yeah. you credit your physical and spiritual healing to your faith and how it sustained you in the aftermath of that day. For our listeners, if you would describe what that means to you and what your faith means to you and how that's affected your life after 9/11.
Well, there is absolutely no question in my mind. When an 80-ton jet comes through the building at 530 miles an hour with 3,000 gallons of jet fuel, you don't survive it because the Army made you the toughest guy in that building. You survive it because the toughest man ever walked this earth 2,000 years ago had something else in mind for your life.
That's right.
The challenges that we would come through, and the Lord's experience would be the motivational factor in our survival. I mean, having Mel read scripture to me and the encouragement of hearing her voice, knowing that she was there. There were a lot of days, Ty, that, and I don't know how many, I'm sure there you've got folks in your audience that have been seriously burned and understand the pain thresholds that you deal with a burn injury. But what has to be done to the burn survivor for your benefit, for you to survive, is far worse than the burn injury itself. The scrubbing that you have to go through in a solution that's water-based with either betadine or some sort of mild bleach or chlorine derivative. That cut you had as a kid on your hand, and your mom put rubbing alcohol on it, and
holy
it stung
cow.
Really bad, and you had to blow on it, except it's 60% of your body that's feeling this, and then the nurses take the wash rag and you know, either directly on muscle or exposed bone or other things that they're having to do. And you're just, I had a trach in my throat so that the respirator could be connected to it for me to breathe. And so I've got no air passing over my vocal cords, and so only the Lord can hear me scream. And
wow.
The thing that, and a little bit of humor here, if you don't mind.
Please.
When I stepped out of the men's restroom, I mean, my injuries that day, as you mentioned in the introduction, I received a Purple Heart, and I've had the privilege of meeting a lot of young men and women who've earned Purple Hearts by clearing buildings in Fallujah or mountainside caves in Afghanistan or our previous wars, Korea, Vietnam, World War II, et cetera. And when they asked me, you know, what was I doing when I got my Purple Heart, and you tell them I was coming out of the men's restroom, there's this very awkward, you know. But the Lord stepped out of the perfection of heaven and dealt with the most ghastly way to die. And so looking at his example of getting through that suffering and taking each moment, for me it was just to get to the best I could, get physically well, and in many ways also be that representative of Cheryl and Sandy, who were never going to walk back into that building. I wanted to get back to the Pentagon because I wanted to not only honor what the Lord had done and the miracles that he had executed on my behalf for me to survive, but also represent Sandy and Cheryl and many others who were never going to walk back into that building.
Wow, that is an incredible story.
Yeah.
And that inspired you to write your book and found the organization called Face the Fire. Tell us about that.
Yes, sir. Well, the book is by Mel and I, and mostly Mel, based upon her journal, because I was enjoying the magnificence of the pharmaceutical industry of the United States through
really?
There, you know, there's a lot I remember, but in many cases it's broken and distorted. But Mel, of course, you know, the doctors wouldn't give her any of the anesthesiology stuff because they needed a lucid Birdwell to sign release documents and the like. But
she probably could have used some being there, huh?
She asked for the Dilaudid, and then
did she?
And some of the, oh yeah, but they said no, we can't give that to you. We have to, because there's some very heavy Medicaid. There's no such thing as a pain-free day in a burn center.
Right.
There's, you can be given enough to lay there and tolerate it while you're counting the seconds and the minutes. But Mel and I, from that experience, you know, Scripture in 2 Corinthians tells us to comfort others as we were comforted. And I had the opportunity to, several months after the attack, while I was in outpatient rehabilitation, visit with the young man who'd been burned in a camping accident. You know, campfire got away from him and was badly burned. And after that visit, it was the opportunity in realizing, you know, this is what Pastor Elwood was talking about when he said the Lord doesn't waste our pain. And so one of the things Mel and I did, knowing that my military career had come to an abrupt end, that what did the Lord put on our hearts to do? And so we founded our ministry to be able to encourage others that have gone through similar difficulties, similar to the cancer survivor coming alongside the current cancer patient, to let folks know that there's a lot of life left to be lived. And in the funds that we've raised, we've given nearly a little over $250,000 in financial gifts to families across the country over the last 8 years, and to assist with that displacement from home. If you recall the sugar plant explosion, I guess it was 5 or 6 years ago there at Imperial Sugar in Georgia.
Yes.
You had 30-something folks that were badly injured that, fortunately, there's a burn center over near Marietta that they were able to get to, but many of those families will live 20, 30, 40 miles away. Burn centers are very regional, and so, and because a burn injury is a very long hospitalization, people will end up having to live nearby, you know, hotel, meals, gas money, all those kinds of things that, that come with being displaced from home, and so our financial gifts have been designed to, assist, folks that are going through that challenge, and so that we can encourage them. And
I've got a couple more questions for you, but I don't want to leave this out. I want to make sure I get it. If you, for our listeners, if you would, give them the website address where they can go to your organization, buy your book, make donations to help people that have been burned in those type situations. Would you do that?
Sure. It's facethefire.org, www.facethefire.org.
Facethefire.org. I'll put a link. I'll put a link on the Ty J. Young Show website as well.
There's a link to get the book through Amazon there. There's a couple of audio files. I think there's one video file. And then Mel just recently updated it with some stuff that we've done here in Dallas at Parkland's Burn Center. So, yeah.
All right, let me change gears here just for a second. When you learned that Osama bin Laden had been killed there in Pakistan, tell me your emotions.
Quiet, calm, pleased that justice had been done, but was not there was not an ecstatic reaction. My chief of staff called me and said, "Hey, Senator, turn the TV on." I'm like, "What? You know, what is it? What is it?"
Right.
Because I was, and once you're in the elected office, you're just like, "Oh, what political thing is happening?"
Right.
But I certainly greeted it with good news. I would also want you to know that while I was not out in the streets cheering, that would usually lead to the question of, what did it seem appropriate to you that folks were out cheering in the streets that Osama was dead? Because there are a lot of people that were complaining about about that, and I said, no, not at all, because there's a very big difference. Ty, there is no moral equivalent. There's a very big moral difference between the people that were in the streets of the Middle East as the towers had crumbled, screaming Allah Akbar and screaming and cheering mass murder, versus people cheering that justice had been done to a mass murderer.
Sure. No question about that.
Big difference.
No question.
So,
yeah.
All right. Well, you're now a Texas, as you just pointed out, you're now a Texas state senator. You're supported by President Bush and others in the Tea Party.
Yes,
tell me this. What's your thoughts on Rick Perry and the debate?
I'm glad he's going to get to the debate. The state, of course, is dealing with a number of challenges. Very much supportive of Governor Perry. I think the biggest reason, more than any other, besides, you know, much of the record that he's accumulated here in Texas over many years, is his announcement speech in South Carolina, I think, was very indicative of what the founders intended the federal government to be. Mm-hmm. Remember, he said that my duty is to make the federal government as inconsequential in your daily life as I can.
Right.
And that's the spirit of limited government, because remember, Governor Perry understands this very clearly, that government has one thing that the private sector does not have, and that's the monopoly on the use of force.
Right.
And so when you put in law things that force businesses to do things that cost money, there comes a point where those businesses will go overseas because it costs less overseas.
That's right.
When the transportation costs and all the things that a product is made somewhere else and brought to the United States, and it's cheaper even to ship it across two oceans. The challenges that we face are government has intruded in the private sector far too often and been deliberate about, we're going to add this cost to this, we're going to add this cost to that. And in doing so, it has expanded not only the reach and specter of control of the federal government, but it has been at the cost of our constitutional freedoms and restrictions on the federal government that are placed in the Constitution. Governor Perry understands that very clearly. He is not going to Washington so that he can per se do for the country what he's done for Texas, because a governor has far more legal authority under a state constitution to do things than what the federal government constitution gives the federal government to do. So he is contracting. He knows that he is going to Washington to be more limited in his authority as a president, should he succeed, as we hope he does.
Got about 30 seconds.
Yeah, we've got to get the federal government back inside its constitutional boxes and stop treating the states, counties, and cities as subcontractors to the federal government.
No two ways about that. And it's very interesting how you put that and how you put it so simply. We're talking today to Colonel Brian Birdwell, absolute American hero. Sir, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, Ty, my privilege. Thank you for what you guys do. Thank you, David. Thank you, Steve. It's been my privilege to join you guys.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right, we're coming.